Welcome to Helpful Social Work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jo. And you can tell us what you think of our podcasts at www.helpfulsocialwork.com. Welcome to this podcast. This is the last formal discussion of Series 2. And we want to use it to talk about the ecological model of social work. Throughout series 1 and 2, we've used our discussion podcast to discuss social work from the individual outwards to the social context. We want to complete series 2 by talking about why we took this approach and how thinking ecologically about social work can help us.
So yes, the podcasts from series 1 and series 2 have been structured to reflect an ecological approach. We started off in series 1 by talking about the importance of personal integrity, and we then looked outwards to our context and the things around us. Social work requires integrity in all senses of the word. That's trueness to yourself, soundness, and completeness. So we have to live up to the potential of social work and to our motivation that's led us into the work. We also need to maintain resilience and sustain ourselves in a really challenging field. And we need to use our whole self to achieve the kind of difference that can be really possible.
That just sounds like such a hard thing to strive for, really, doesn't it? When you think about that, maintaining your resilience, sustaining yourself, using your whole self and really holding on to that motivation and behaving with integrity. So authenticity is what you're describing there to me. It's that remaining true to yourself and true to your profession.
That's just reminded me of some research that I've been reading by Harry Ferguson, which is based on his observations of social workers. And he was talking about how reflection in action does happen. He sees social workers doing that, and he observes them doing that, and they talk about it. But they also have an awareness that complete reflection can be really difficult when you're in a challenging situation. And say you're under threat, or you're anxious, or you've got lots and lots of things to sift through, that you might close off a part of your deep reflection in order to get the work done. And then you would rely on colleagues and supervisors and peers to help you do that deeper reflection when you're away from the immediate pressures. And I think that fits with this, because integrity is really difficult and demanding, and it's easier to do when you're in a safe place. You know, using your whole self, tapping into your resilience, thinking about how sustained you are and how ethical you are, that's much easier when you've got safety. And when you're out in the field, you are trying to use your integrity as much as possible, but also trying to kind of preserve yourself. So I think when you say it's difficult, it just made me think, yes, it needs peer support.
Absolutely. And then you've also talked about the environment there. You know, safety is absolutely critical, because we've got three things, don't we, that can either work for us or against us: our biology, our behaviour, and our environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, biology is the way that our brain is wired to see different as dangerous, and how we respond to strong emotions such as stress by, you know, fighting, hiding, getting away from it. Mm-hmm. And when that's happening for us and we become preoccupied by our own anxieties, then it can be hard to kind of realize that we're not acting in a way that is helpful or congruent with what our service user needs, particularly if it's the service user or the service user environment that we are perceiving as threatening to us. And so I think that biology can be something that really can push us into compromised situations. And then that leaves us with our behaviour, because our behaviour is the responses and the choices we make to both our feelings and our environment. You know, can things different equals dangerous? Can we change that to different equals stay aware but stay involved? Can we find ways to anchor ourselves so that when we walk into situations that we are unsure of, we can give ourselves enough space to be able to stay involved with the other person. You know, so, and the other thing is our environment. If environments are noisy and busy and chaotic, then sometimes we can see them as either dangerous or exciting. And both of those are really high level emotions. And so therefore we could react in all sorts of ways, impulsively, cautiously, or fearfully. And if all of that's going on inside us, then our integrity can be compromised. The only thing I would say about being lucky enough to work in a field where we have a really strong set of values and ethics is that we can be clear about right and wrong, I think, and what's expected of us. And I think that you kind of, you know, when you're acting out of step with yourself, you know how when you're in a situation and you do something or you say something, you react perhaps with fear. I know once, so for instance, I've hung up on someone in anger. You know that that's what you're doing. Or if you back away from a door that you're fearful of going into a house and you go, oh, I don't think they're in. It's that kind of stuff, isn't it? You know that you're kind of acting a little bit off in yourself.
Because we were talking earlier about examples of integrity, and the thing that kept coming up was that idea of steadfastness, that which is what you're saying here, isn't it? That you keep going. That ability to keep going when things are really difficult, and your kind of ability to do the right thing is compromised by all these stimuli, whether that's an environment that you're uncomfortable with, whether it's things that are going on in your own biology, or whether it's behaviors that are unhelpful that you're bringing into the situation or experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's easier to act with integrity when the stakes are low as well. Like, you're likely to be compromised when you perceive that the threat to yourself and your own well-being and your own reputation and your own health is at its highest, aren't you? That's when you're going to try and compromise. So it's often quite easy to be honest and upright and do everything that you're meant to do when everything's where it should be. But it takes – integrity is behaving – authentically and ethically, despite the cost to yourself. And I think in social work, we come across many situations where the personal cost for us is quite high, because sometimes we're being asked to challenge in environments that don't feel safe to challenge in. But that's something that we have to have the integrity and courage to do.
Yeah, and that goes for work directly with people, but also the challenges that we need to make to organisations, doesn't it, and to partners often, and to the powerful.
Yeah, I remember a social worker once saying to me about, they were working for this authority, and they said, I'm being asked to do things that are not safe. I'm being asked to do things that are unsafe. And so I said, well, then don't do them. And they just looked at me like, well, how can I not do them? Yeah. And I just kind of said, well, if you're being asked to do things that aren't safe, I'm assuming you're saying for your clients, then how can you do them?
Yeah, and that's a really good example of where there's personal cost potentially, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to this idea of then it's more possible to do that deep thinking about what the right thing is to do and how to do it with peers.
Yeah, and what their point was, well, it's easy for you to say, Joe, because you're not, your livelihood's not dependent on this the way mine is.
I mean, the interesting thing about all the podcasts that we've done in series one and two is that we've been looking at kind of layers that influence us. So we started with ourselves, and then we've talked about colleagues and organisations, and then the wider organisations, partners that we work with. And then the public context. And in all of those discussions, the ability to maintain integrity and to fulfill the role was affected by factors that could be either positive or negative. You know, we talked about recording, didn't we? We looked at supervision, we looked at how multi-agency work happens, the kind of scrutiny that social workers are under. That last one actually maybe is more difficult to say that it could be positive as well as negative. But of course it could be, couldn't it, if you have good good news stories and things. Mm. So all of these things affect us, you know, as we look out through the ecological kind of layers. They can all affect us positively or negatively. And the important thing is to keep thinking about how we're affected.
Mm. And to be really mindful, isn't it? Like if you have a feeling, treat that feeling as information. Your emotions are information. And so if you treat them as information and say, what is this trying to tell me? So therefore, what is it that I need to do about it? And if you get to a stage where you think you might be compromised, mm-hmm. that you can't be as authentic as you want to be, then sometimes doing nothing in that moment and looking for support is a good thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you think, okay, the only response I can think of here is one that I'm going to regret afterwards or that is not helpful, can I walk away? I think the one of the things with social workers is that we're really programmed to do, aren't we?
Yeah.
And sometimes just looking for that support and being more thoughtful, that stop, think, do model can really help when your emotions are very strong.
Yeah, so in any social work encounter, we have to consider ourselves, but also our responses to others and the context. And we have got a tool that you can use to help you think about an experience, both for yourself and for other people involved. It can be used with others, on your own, or in supervision. But essentially, it's about thinking through for each party, that's you, anyone else who's there, how that person was responding to the experience. And then you can consider what the impact of that is on the relationship that you've got. So there's four areas of response to consider for you and for anyone else involved. And that is the physical response. So that's the kind of things we're experiencing. The way we feel, our emotional response, our cognitions, the things that we're thinking, and our behaviours, the way we're acting. So the idea is that you think for yourself about an experience and think, okay, what was going on physically, emotionally, what's going on, you know, what's going through my head, and what was I doing, and think about that as impact on you. Those responses kind of demonstrate impact of that situation. And then think about that for, say, the parent, the child, the adult, the carer, your boss, you know, the person you're supervising, whoever else was in that encounter. And those responses are all really important clues that you can analyse to think about what's working, what's not working, and where are the barriers and enablers.
And by thinking about yourself and then imagining the other people in the scenario, you actually build up empathy. And I think the empathy for others, but also empathy for yourself, because this is a really difficult job to do well. It requires you to really use your relationship and to maintain integrity through every encounter. And so if you can actually understand what drives you physically, what drives you emotionally, and what thinking patterns you have. Because we can all have thinking patterns that are a bit distorted or that aren't helpful, that drive behaviours that aren't helpful. And I think for me, if you understand your own attachment and regulation and competency model, it can really support you to exert the most control over your biology and your behaviour and your environment. Because if you understand the way that you respond and relate and see others, then, which is your attachment model, then it's going to really help you kind of understand what you're looking for. So if you have high expectation of helpfulness from others, then the kindness of others and enjoyment that can be gained from others, you're more likely to reach out and hold a positive set of beliefs and effectiveness about yourself and about others. Whereas if you have a kind of a script that is more about lower expectations, thinking that you're going to be hurt or rejected or pushed away by a certain group, then that's going to change the way you interact as well. Mm. And it's the same with regulation, which is, to me, you know, good regulation is just the key to a good social life, actually, to a good relational life, because that's really being able to make choices about your emotions and how they affect you. So understand what you feel, really think about what you want to present of that to someone else, making a good choice that keeps you both safe and is still authentic, and then responding with those emotions. And I just think that being able to choose what you show the world is a really, really helpful, safe skill. And I always talk, it's like it's a public-facing story that you can present to people. And the trick of that is making sure that it stays authentic.
Yes.
So that you've got enough safety. So you present, like if you're really angry, if somebody that you're working with makes you angry, anger is going to be one of the least helpful emotions you can display. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is demonstrate the impact that the person has made through their behavior without actually showing anger inappropriately. So you want to think about it and go, okay, I feel angry. What can I say to this person that will help them understand the feeling without
demonstrating the
behavior? Yeah, because you're just demonstrating the behavior. That's exactly right. And so instead it might be something like, when you do that, it makes it really hard for me to listen to you because I spend too much time feeling angry with you for that, which is not helpful to either of us. So how could we have this conversation in a way that lets you tell me how you're feeling and helps me listen to you? And the last thing I talked about, competency. You know, if you feel competent as an adult, then you believe that you're actually capable and that you're deserving of good things. And so you go out to the world with an expectation that things are going to be good, and you don't see other people as competition. You see other people as cooperative, potential partners, potential collaborators, and that allows you to actually share scarce resources such as affection, material goods, your time, all of those things. So you actually see people as things that you want to cooperate with. And I think that for us in social work, seeing the people that we are trying to work with as people we want to cooperate with, people who have things to give us and that we have things to give them, is really helpful.
So if you go into a situation knowing how to, expecting a good relationship and knowing how to manage your emotions and feeling competent, then you're much less likely to get derailed by whatever comes at you, I suppose. So you're starting from a secure place of feeling like you can maintain your integrity, that you've got the right kind of skills and ability to do that.
I think so. And you can also feel safe indicating that you don't know the answers and that you're out of your depth, because you won't see that as a failure or a letdown on your own part. You can kind of hold back on stuff because you don't have to rush in there and rescue and be the whole answer. You see your work with a client as an equal equation. Integrity comes from your behavior and your words being as close together as they possibly can be. And that whenever you feel a separation between them, you're able to actually pick up on that quickly and go back and say to someone, what I said before or what I did before wasn't actually right. Mm-hmm. And so now I need to make it better.
And thinking behind the whole of series one and two has been that if we're aware of ourselves and our surroundings, then we can act more deliberately and we can maintain our integrity by recognizing kind of barriers and enablers to our integrity and responding appropriately to them. And we can be good agents, to have good relationships. And that can be anything from making sure that we've had something to eat before we go into a situation, recognizing our emotions, using reflection in action so that we've got that kind of sense of awareness of how we're doing, doing the stuff that you've been talking about around self-regulation to manage our reactions. And all of those things then allow us to model good adult behavior to others. And it's really important to remember that whatever barriers and enablers we experience, the people that we work with, the adults, the children, the families, they experience the same things, but generally, I would say, a lot more strongly. And we'll also not have the the level of resources and backing usually that we've got to work well in those situations. So they need us to have courage and integrity to act well. They're the ones really under the pressure of public opinion, grappling with the difficult context. They're the ones who are experiencing the most exclusion and blame, the most control over their lives. So although we have some of that going on, we've got to we recognise our privilege and our power and use that well to encourage and sustain others.
Yeah, I think for me, that's all about, once again, you know, if we think about integrity, it's about actually recognising that we are in a powerful position and not kind of shying away from that, but actually thinking, well, what do I want to do with that? If I have this privilege to have the power to actually help people live lives differently, live lives that they want to live, then what is it that I want to leave behind? And I think that always comes down to, and I know we have talked about this before, but, you know, social work is a legacy role. It's not something that you do and it doesn't leave a mark. It leaves a mark on the lives of other people for their lives. And so I think as a social worker, you do have to keep asking yourself, what kind of social worker do I want to be? What kind of interactions do I want to have with people? And what kind of things do I want people to say about me? And I know that I was saying to you earlier, and I have banged on about this before, I realise, but, you know, one of my most treasured references actually comes from a parent group that I helped set up. And they wrote me this little reference when I left that actually, you know, said that they commended my honour, integrity and courage to perform an extremely difficult job of coordinating an inadequate pool of respite hours for an economically, socially and emotionally disadvantaged group of consumers, and our community has been better for Miss Chill's contribution. I was a chill then. But I guess the thing is, in all those years, Jerry, no one's ever said better of me than
that's
that.
That's exactly the legacy you'd want, isn't it? That,
yeah.
You know, the way that you, the values that you had led you to act persistently for something really crucial that made a difference. That's what every social worker would hope.
And when you get these things, and I have kept a copy of this little reference, and like I said, it was in the 80s. And every now and again, I look at it and I just ask myself, if they were going to write about me now, would they still be able to say some of those same things? So I think when you find a standard, you want to just keep checking in with it. Mm-hmm. And if you find that you can't deliver that, then you need to challenge yourself about why. What's happening? Is it my biology? Is it my behaviour? Is it the environment? Is it how I'm regulating myself? What's happening in my world that's pushing me into a compromised position?
Yeah, and that's
and how
where
can
you,
I?
Yeah, you need to ask for help there. Yeah.
Yeah.
To get.
How can I get to a place to actually have that, like I said, you know, your behaviour and your beliefs as close together as possible, which is what we're looking for, I think.
Great. So in a couple of weeks, we will be doing our final podcast for Series 2, which will be our review of the year, a introduction for Series 3, which will be starting in April.
And just on a final note, I think I'd like to say that one of the wonderful things for me now that I teach social workers is that I meet social workers that have, you know, their cups are overflowing with integrity and courage and determination. And I think that's really fantastic. I mean, not a day goes by when I'm working where I don't meet at least one or two people who I think, wow, I wouldn't mind being like them when I grow up.
Thanks.
So we'd love to hear from them, wouldn't we, Jerry?
We would, yes. And it's super easy. You can leave a voice message on our website. You can send us a message from the website. You can leave a review on iTunes. You can find our Facebook page, Helpful Social Work, or you can attack us on Twitter. I'm at Effective Prac and Joe is at Strengthening Prac. So, yes, do let us know what you think.